the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to this week's show. I'm your host Lisa Anderson, joined in the studio by the wonderful Suzanne Hadley-Goslin. Hey Suzanne.
Hey Lisa.
And Sarah Kittle. Hey.
Hey Lisa, thanks for having me.
Yay. So it's kind of a ladies roundtable this week because we dealt with the guys 2 weeks ago and married couple last week. So we're trying to mix it up. So that's good stuff. Let me just tell you what is on this week's show. We're going to be answering a question here from a girl, from Stephanie, who wants to know about dealing with Christian versus non-Christian friends in college. Most of her friends are non-Christians. She wants Christian friends, but she tends to think that they're a little bit fake. So trying to get some insight on that. And then our culture segment is Christian music artist Jimmy Needham. And actually, one of our summer interns, Caitlin, did that interview. So looking forward to hearing that this week. So that's exciting stuff. But for the roundtable today, oh, and also housekeeping, need to give this shout as well. This week's show is sponsored by Cedarville University. You know, I've mentioned them in the past about my friend Julie, who's very smart and went there. So I give it a high rating for that. But they did give me some text, so I'm going to professionally read it. They said to discover Cedarville University, a Christ-centered learning community committed to academic excellence, offering modern facilities, cutting-edge technology, and experienced faculty. Cedarville University is inspiring greatness. Learn more at cedarville.edu. Cedarville University, thanks for sponsoring the show. All right, I have the ladies here. We had a discussion 2 weeks ago with the guys on what I called confident versus creepy, kind of asking them, okay, you know, when guys try to pursue, then sometimes the women are like, you know, guys don't pursue. And then when they do, they're like, oh, that's too much. And so guys are like, what in the world? You know, how can we win? And so we talked with Glenn Stanton and a couple resident guys here about their impressions of that and what they feel women are looking for, or just their questions surrounding that. So it sparked quite a little discussion on the blog related to that, because one guy, Joe, basically was like, look, he said, in fact, I'll read an excerpt from his first comment. He said, I'm pretty skeptical of the idea that women want to feel secure or taken care of by men, because they sure don't broadcast that. Single women seem very independent and secure to me while moving up the corporate ladder. I'm looking for that girl that wants me to take care of her. However, in today's society, she's very hard, if not impossible, to find. So obviously women are saying they want to be taken care of and they want, you know, guys who are confident, but maybe they're not broadcasting that. So that brings the whole independent label on women, you know, Miss Independent, which I have gotten my entire life. And so I thought I would bring Suzanne and Sarah in here to kind of weigh in on this. So ladies, you're both strong women. What has been your experience with this in the past?
Well, I think there's some confusion about the appearance of security and how a woman actually feels. And so, you know, guys may be looking at a woman and saying, oh, she's got a great job, she's got a house, she's, you know, got this and that. So obviously she's not looking for security. But I think it's a basic emotional need for women to feel secure. And that might not, in this day and age, necessarily include their physical needs so much as their emotional needs. So when Kevin and I were in premarital counseling, our pastor said, you need to imagine that you each have an S on your chest, like Superman. And he said his S is significance. He wants a woman to make him feel important and significant and like he has something to offer. And yours is security. And that is, you want to know that he's never going to leave you, that you are the world to him, that you are secure in your relationship with him. So when I think about a woman wanting security, that's kind of what I think about.
Yeah, which is kind of unique because, again, as we've talked about on previous podcasts, you're older than Kevin. You know, you kind of had been in your career longer than he had. So you probably did have to sit down and flesh out, you know, what that looks like. It's not about you being an editor of a magazine or you being, you know, strong-minded or a writer or whatever.
Yeah. And I asked him this morning, you know, thinking about this topic, did, you know, is that a turnoff to you that I had a good job and I owned a house and all of that? And he said he really didn't even consider that because he knew from talking to me that he had something to offer me. So just in who he is and his passions in life and all of that, he felt confident that he had something to offer me, including his leadership.
Yeah. Okay, Sarah, how about you?
Well, not that I have a lot of experience to pull from, but what I want with security is I want a guy who is stable, who I can trust, who will tell me the truth, who treats people well, who's honest, who is a hard worker. And you want to know that this person's someone that you can have a healthy relationship with, someone who will look out for you. And I appreciate it when my male friends will walk me to my car when it's late at night and we're like leaving a group event, mm-hmm. because that's just something I feel more comfortable about. And my mom even says, she's like, make sure you get somebody to walk you out to your car. And so when a guy does that, you know, I'm not feeling like he's trying to control me or be all macho. It's saying that he sees that there are dangers in the world and he sees me as valuable, and he's going to use his, you know, manliness that God's given him mm-hmm. to look out for the women friends in his life. So I have no trouble asking a guy, hey, can you walk me to my car? And they may think I'm trying to get them to marry me. I don't know. But, you know, I need someone to walk me to my car sometimes. And other times, you know, you can. And I know all women feel differently about that. And there's some women that don't have anybody to walk them to their car, or they don't even want anybody to walk them to their car. But I do enjoy the male company too. So I, you know,
yeah,
I will ask.
Well, I know one of the guys on the blog was saying how, you know, he was like, ladies, he said, just because you can change a tire doesn't mean that you have to, you know, let a guy, if a guy's offering to do mm-hmm. it, let him do that. And I think that's true. But I also want to implore the guys, you know, to give us a break, because many of us, as one woman on the blog said, she said, we're just used to that. And so we don't really know. So for us, it's very awkward because we don't want to seem to be imposing. We don't want to be too clingy, too needy, mm-hmm. too weird, you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, a lot of guys, and some of them weighed in on the blog on this too. And I mean, thanks for your honesty, but it's kind of like women are like, oh, you know, they're like, well, yeah, if I'm interested in you, I'm going to be all over this stuff and wanting to do that. Okay, well, if you're not, then what? And then we're just going to feel terrible. You know, we'll be like, oh, he doesn't want to change my tire because he's not interested. Mm-hmm. But I think it is true that women need to step back and say, you know, to know how to ask for help, and to know how to step back and say, yeah, to not have to assert, you know, oh my goodness, you know, my brother's taught me how to do this and I know how to do, you know, do mm-hmm. that, because that is helpful for guys to feel significant, to feel like they have something to offer and something mm-hmm. that is uniquely theirs.
And guys do have something to offer. You know, I still like it when guys take out the trash or they kill the spiders. And I think mm-hmm. that God gives each men and women their own special, unique qualities specific to their gender. And I mm-hmm. think it's okay to embrace those.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because I, you know, and I've mentioned this, I think, before on the show as well, but I've often criticized the guys in my life because I've had guys say to me that they chose specific women in our acquaintance to date. Maybe all of them didn't move towards mm-hmm. marriage or whatever, because those women appeared more helpless and they appeared more, you know, like they needed someone. And they were like, well, all you other women, you just have your careers and you're just doing life. And I've actually had guys tell me, well, I didn't even think you wanted to be married, because here you are just, you know, whatever. And I'm like, has anyone ever asked me?
Do they listen to you?
I know. But there is, I guess, you know, some people just move into assumptions that, oh, because you're not married now in your 30s, it must mm-hmm. mean that I've turned down 20 offers or that I, you know, whatever. And I'm like, let's stick with the facts.
Well, on the flip side, going back to what my pastor said about the S on men being significance, I think sometimes maybe a guy will be drawn to a woman who is appearing like she has more needs and needs to be taken care of, because that appeals to his sense of significance. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you are a strong woman, you need to be conscious of that, and you mm-hmm. need to be looking at how can I make the men in my life feel significant, rather than completely putting them off and saying I've got everything under control, because that does affect them, and they're not going to feel that they're significant in your life if you're not giving them the opportunity.
Right. And I think what you said is very important there at the front end of, you know, there are a lot of needs that aren't translated into, you know, things that need tools or things that need money or whatever. It's not about finding a practical solution all the time. I mean, a lot of times, you know, I own a home. I just figured it was a practical, a pragmatic and wise decision. But, you know, my fence was like torn apart by vandals, and I had to figure out, oh my goodness, now I need to figure out how to put a fence in and call a company, you know. And that's the kind of thing that married women take for granted, because there's always someone there that has to worry about that fence with you. Mm-hmm. And me, I was stuck out there with this fence and how to fix it and what I was going to do and what kind of fence to get and make sure someone wasn't ripping me off and stuff. And that's exhausting. That kind of life is exhausting. But so is trying to move through life emotionally and spiritually and in many other ways alone. And I think, you know, give maybe some of the women who've been single longer a chance, or a listen, at least when it comes to that kind of stuff. I don't know.
Right. And you might be perceiving someone the wrong way. Just because a woman is taking care of herself out of necessity doesn't mean that she's not open to being taken care of.
Right.
I like the idea of a guy who wants to take care of me, mm-hmm. not one who wants to control me or, you know, not keep his word or try to order my food for me without asking what I want. But, you know, just someone who sees you as valuable, who talks with you, finds out your interest and wants to do things that he knows you will like. So I think that appeals to most women is that you want a guy who wants to take care of you. Not that you need him to take care of everything, even though there are some things that you genuinely need him to help you with, but that you want him to want to take care of you.
Right. And I think that's where that fine line comes in. I know Marie wrote on the blog, basically saying that most women are ultimately looking for a man to take care of her, not all men. You know, this doesn't apply to all men. Yes. And I think that's where some guys feel like, you know, well, I'm going to pursue this woman. I'm going to chase her down. I'm going to just badger her into falling in love with me or into seeing my value or into seeing my significance. And if I do this, 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 and this for her, you know, she will certainly realize how amazing I am. And women do that in their own way, too. You know, if I just hang, we talked about that with the guys. If I just hang out with him long enough, he'll see what an amazing woman I am. And I think that, you know, we really have to be careful of seeing that distinction as well, because that's where I brought up with the guys. That's where confidence moves into creepy. When a guy doesn't understand the signals and doesn't take no for an answer,
right.
and he just keeps badgering.
Mm-hmm. Of course, sometimes persistence does work. I mean, you hear stories of people that got together and the girl's like, you wouldn't give up on me, or the guy's like, you know, so yeah. I'm not saying that that's the right way to go, but I'm saying sometimes
totally.
It does
but
work.
Like respectful persistence yeah.
And
is
there's,
important.
And there's an appropriate time for a guy to take care of a woman, and I think, you know, mm-hmm. in the first few dates, that's not necessarily the time. I mean, mm-hmm. there's little ways that he can, like, when I was first getting together with Kevin, he would buy my coffee, mm-hmm. and he would just say, oh, it's because I get a discount because mm-hmm. I work here, you know, so. Mm-hmm. But just those little things that made me feel taken care of. However, right. had he come in and said, you know, let me fix your house and let me fix your car, and I think I would have been a little creeped out by that.
Right.
So
and
that came
kind of
later
too
in
much
our relationship.
Familiarity.
Well, yes. just watching my parents and their marriage, you see that a husband and wife, they essentially lay down their lives for each other. So to see a man that's willing in the early stages in small things to, so to speak, lay down his life. I mean, that's what's necessary in a long-term committed marriage, is a man who's willing to get up early and go to work and work long hours to take care of his family. You know, my dad has done that for years and years. So that's a really important quality that you start to detect in small things when the relationship starts.
Yes. Right. And to recognize, I mean, I think guys have just as much a level of needing to trust God with the situation as women do. We often mm-hmm. talk about women because we have a more, you know, a following role, as just saying you have to trust the Lord, just wait. Well, guys have a certain measure of that as well, because they do, you know, you can sit down, and I have a friend who has told me, I thought it was really insightful. He's like, yeah, my problem is I always fall in love with the woman before having ever established any kind of relationship with her. And I'm like, oh, bless his heart. But I mean, honestly, if you are like cyber stalking someone and finding out their entire like occupational history, and you're on LinkedIn and you're stalking them on Facebook, and you're, you know, and you haven't even had a real conversation with them, then you kind of come and blaze them away with like their entire history. Mm-hmm. It's just a little too much sometimes. And so I think, you know, I think that guys can kind of learn from that and not come in being too assuming and stuff
right.
like that. So, all right. Well, I think this has been helpful, ladies. It's always good to get perspectives from other women, because sometimes I feel like I'm just out there like the lone wolf. Because you know? I, you know, like I said, always get the independent label. All right. Well, thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa.
Outside my room looking in, you'll probably find me all over the place. Pictures of me back in school, slight crooked kid, like the smile on my face. And my first guitar by the bed, with circles of dust clinging to wood. It drew the first song from my head, singing if I was gone, I'd be gone for good. I'm afraid to grow up. Somewhere inside is the will of a man. All I've ever wanted was something to give and love.
Welcome to The Boundless Show. My name is Caitlin Searcy. I'm a summer intern working at Focus and with the Boundless team. And today in the studio, we have Mr. Jimmy Needham.
Hi there.
Hi. It's a very awesome thing to have Mr. Jimmy here because I'm a big fan.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah. So kind of just tell us how you got started, that whole thing.
Sure.
Know? I mean, did you plan on being in the music industry and...
No, I've always really enjoyed the stage and performing. I grew up doing like musical theater and stuff like that, acting and things mm-hmm. like that. But I never thought I'd be like an artist, quote unquote. In fact, I went to college to study history and philosophy because one of my passions, probably my biggest passion besides music, is just investing in singles, college age, and high school students. You know, so. It's just so I thought, well, maybe I could be a history teacher, kind of get in on the ground floor in that way and, you know, spend time with folks that way. So but I went to college and was studying and doing all that. And at that time, I had written a handful of songs and was playing them in some coffee shops and places like that. And it was kind of cool. You know, my dad decided he wanted to fund an independent CD for me if I wanted to make one, which is awesome. Yes, for yeah. a guy who has no money to get that from his dad is awesome. So mm-hmm. I did that, and we made it a CD back in 2005. And basically, I just put it online. I put it on places like MySpace and iTunes and different places where people could hear it. And so that was August 05, and... literally 3 months later, November, I get a phone call from the president of Impop Records in Nashville saying, hey, me and my team heard your music on MySpace last week. We love what we hear, and we awesome. Want to fly down to Houston to talk about signing you. So
that's so cool.
Yeah, just kind of was, it was really handed to me, which it was such a God thing. And so now I've been doing this for about 5 years now, full time. And God's just taken me on a really amazing journey. It's really great.
So that wasn't your plan then to make it big at all?
No, in fact, it was quite the opposite because there's one thing I know about my heart, and it's that I like accolades and notoriety. I think we all
yeah,
do,
we all
you know,
do.
But I have a special bent towards mm-hmm. that, you know? And so I remember even being in high school and going, if I was ever to do performance like that, I would struggle a lot with ego issues. And so I remember telling folks, hey, I don't want to do this. But you know, I think it was God getting me to that place where I decided I didn't want to do it because of the fame mm-hmm. and all that. That once I got to a place where that disinterested me, he brought it, you know, into my life. And so now I can go, okay. I didn't pursue this and try to beat down doors so that I could make it. Mm-hmm. God gave this to me when I didn't want to make it. And that's right. kind of refreshing for me at least. So.
Yeah. So has it been like a struggle since then, since you've kind of come into it, keeping that in mind,
sure.
but still, having all the raving fans and,
yeah, right.
and everything.
Right. All four of them.
Whatever.
It's a deep struggle for me still. I mean, if I can just be honest, it's a regular constant battle in my mind of not thinking of myself as higher than I should, of not beating myself up when I'm not as successful as I want to be. In fact, that's what the whole new record, Nightlights, is about. It's about me wrestling with what does it look like to give God the glory, even at the expense of my own notoriety and fame, you know, so... but yeah, and God's been good, and he gives me victory, but it's a constant battle.
Right.
Yeah.
So Nightlights is kind of a reflection of you coming through that and having an understanding.
Totally. And the title Nightlights even refers back to that. You know, there's a line in one of my songs, The Reason I Sing, where I say, compared to you, I'm just a nightlight against the blazing sun.
Right.
And really the idea is, if we can get a proper perspective of God and how big and how glorious he is, then... once we see him for who he is, we'll begin to see ourselves in a proper context, and we won't elevate ourselves too highly.
Right.
We'll have an esteeming of ourselves that's in line with the Bible. So
yeah, that's so cool because it's really rare that you hear that from someone who's so popular. You know,
sure.
a lot of people are they start out really doing like well. I mean, yeah. they have good intentions, but I think along the way it's hard to keep that up because of all the fame and all the.
Well, I think that the only way that I could that I can keep from getting, you know, a big head and all that is to constantly talk about it and let people know, hey, I'm jacked up. I've got issues, you know.
Right. So you're not like
it keeps me in check. I mean, right. you're going to keep me in check. The listeners keep me in check. My wife keeps me in check. Everybody, you know, so it's good.
There's a lot of accountability in Absolutely. That too with just all Absolutely. The fans. So that's awesome. What has been like the biggest struggle that you've had since being involved in music? And
you know, that obviously is a big one. I would say just on a personal level, it's hard being a musician who travels almost all the time and also being married.
Right.
Because I love my wife so much and want to be there for her and be a present husband. I don't want to be the guy who, you know, she doesn't know who her husband is, you know. Right. And but at the same time, this is what the job that's God's called me to, I believe, and I'm walking in faith in that. And so, you know, me and my wife Kelly, we wrestle with that. You know, how long apart is too long? You know, you know, how do we do this and still allow me to pay the bills and things like that? So, it is a challenge, but my wife is gracious and patient, and we're working through it and trying to figure that out. So
right. So how have you found the balance between like career and like being a husband and
yeah.
and all that?
You know, one of the things we do is try to set up boundaries and, just time boundaries even. Hey, you know, once it gets past a week and a half of being apart, mm-hmm. it's really important for me to get a plane ticket home, you know, right. and see my family. You know, stuff like we strive to, though imperfectly, I strive to make sure I'm home at least 2 Sundays a month, mm-hmm. To be at my home church with my wife and, stay committed to that, because it's really easy, you know, to book a ton of shows and just be gone all the time. And you, part of you goes, well, that's good because you're making money, you're impacting people for the gospel, you're, you know,
providing
whatever
for your family,
exactly,
all that,
you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But also, my first ministry biblically is to my wife, you
yeah,
know.
Totally.
And if I fail at that, I fail, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we set up boundaries and things like that. We also, she comes on the road with me sometimes. She's a great violinist, and so she'll come on the road
oh, cool.
and play violin with me. And mm-hmm. we actually just did that last week. We had a show in Arkansas that she came to, and it was good. So
yeah. So she struggled with that at all?
Yeah. Being gone. Yeah, mm-hmm. she has, and she talks about it. Like she has blogs that she's written. I think her website is kellyneedham.wordpress.com. Oh, you corrected
I've
me.
I've been reading,
that's
yeah.
right, that's good.
Very so, encouraging, by the way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. well, thank you, and I'll let her know you said that. She, yeah, she struggled with, you know, being an artist wife and, you know, finding her identity not in that she's Jimmy Needham's wife, but that she's a child of God and things like that.
Right.
And it was hard, and we're kind of, you know, working through that and, but yeah, don't let anyone ever tell you that this business is easy, because mm-hmm. it's not, you know, it's interesting.
Yeah. Being from Nashville, it's like the line is infinitely long for people that want to make it big, but I think they don't, especially people I know trying to make it in Christian music,
sure.
you know, they don't realize all the challenges and struggles that would come with that. They kind of see more of the, like, getting their music out there or
right.
getting their name out there or whatever, so.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
It's risky.
Mm-hmm.
The most dangerous place for a human heart, someone told me, is on a stage.
Wow.
And I think that's so true. Mm-hmm. You know, I found that to be true. So
yeah, because you're receiving the praises of man, and that's what we all want. You know, we all want to be praised and glorified.
No one can handle worship but God too.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, you know, leave that to him to receive, you know.
Totally.
And it's tricky.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to talking about your wife and your relationship, since this is Boundless.
Sure.
We most of our listeners are single and kind of are wanting to get married or trying to get married.
She's trying.
trying to. We're trying
Come
to help
on.
Them get married.
Yeah,
so,
totally.
So tell us about, like, you and Kelly and you guys meeting, and how did you start dating
yeah.
and all that?
We met in college. We went to a university called Texas A&M in Texas,
mm-hmm.
believe it or not.
Ooh.
And we met there. This was, I guess, 5 or 6 years ago now. And I found out she played violin, and I asked her to be in my band because mm-hmm. I'm smooth like that.
Okay.
and so we started playing together, and I really did want her to play with me, and it was great. And so we, we did some of the first shows I ever did were with her, and okay. that was in September of 05. She started playing with me. I asked her to start dating me in November of 05. And then I knew pretty quickly after that that she was the girl I wanted to marry. And mm-hmm. so in March of 06, I asked her to marry me.
Wow.
So, and we got married 4 months later. So from first date to I do was 9 months and 12 days.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I know. It was, awesome. Yeah, we celebrated our one-year dating anniversary 3 months into marriage. So, you know, it's just so funny.
That is funny. Wow.
And I was, we got married the beginning of my senior year of college and the beginning of her junior year. But she finished in 3 years because she's that way.
Awesome.
Yeah, she's a genius. So and now we are celebrating 4 years of marriage. It is awesome and wonderful. It was interesting being married in college, though.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you about that.
Yeah, it's like I just have never known a level of busyness like that, because at the same time, we're finishing up both of our senior years, doing our, you know, I was writing thesis papers and all that. You know, we're finishing up all our classes. She was doing 19 hours a semester. I was doing 16, and we just got married. And to top it all off, I just got signed to my label,
okay.
And so I'm traveling now. So Monday through Thursday. Basically,
mm-hmm.
We're in class. We're in, you know, Italian or
right.
economics. And Thursday night, we hop on a plane and we fly out of state and we play concerts all weekend.
Wow.
And then we fly home Monday. You know, there was even a weekend, I've told a story before a couple times, but there's even a weekend where we left Thursday from class, got on a plane, flew to Australia, did a 30-minute concert. In Australia.
30 minutes.
We slept, we got back on the plane, came back, and we're in class Monday night.
You're kidding
yeah.
me.
So our weekend was literally spent on the other side of the world playing a show.
And then you're back for
And then we're
Monday.
Back. And yeah, and you know, I had a quiz or whatever. You know, it's just like it was a crazy, crazy life. Yeah. So
wow. Yeah, a lot of my friends in my college group have started to get engaged or married. Actually, my roommate just got married in May.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And so a lot of their questions have been, I guess the ones getting engaged or people who want to get engaged mm-hmm. are, should we wait until we're out of college, you know, because
sure.
that's kind of my parents' generation has told us that, like,
sure.
you need to wait until you're financially stable,
totally,
you know, yeah. like get your degrees and make sure mm-hmm. you're independent and then you can get married. It's not wise to do otherwise.
Sure.
And so I think a lot of my friends have been asking, like, is it okay to get married in college mm. or what's that like?
Yeah. Well, you know, my advice might not resonate with maybe a ton of parents out there, but the advice that I got when we were thinking down that road was given to me by parents of kids and things like that. But the advice was this. One of the questions that was asked to us as we were dating, and we're pretty sure this was the girl and I was the guy that, you know, for each other,
mm-hmm.
was... what was the purpose of your dating? And the answer is to find out if we were going to get married.
Right.
And the second question was, so do you know that? Yes. So now what is the purpose of your dating?
Wow.
And and we didn't have an answer. No purpose, you know, like, mm-hmm. and so that really kind of put a spark in me and Kelly to go, okay, so if we've really figured out that this is the right thing,
right.
let's move forward with it, you know? And there's a lot to be said for the wisdom of making sure that you're, you know, on some level financially stable to do marriage.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is, for those of you guys listening, it's easy to live on a little. It really is. It is. And that was, again, another piece of advice that someone gave me. I was like, you know, I just got signed to a label. I was barely making any money, but I knew that we wanted to move forward with this. And mm-hmm. the advice that I got from a dear friend of mine who's an older man, you know, he said, you can make it on a little, you know.
Yeah.
And we did. We made it on very little for
like
a year.
Like, how little are we talking to him here?
Well, I mean, our whole rent and utilities every month was a little over $500.
Wow. You eat a lot of ramen noodles.
Yeah,
and
a lot
of,
you know.
All that stuff.
We made it, you know, and it was good. And so, yes, absolutely, you know, be wise in the decision you're making to, you know, if you have no job and no education, it may be in the best thing to do to just hop into marriage. But the reality is, if this is a God-led thing and there's some level of income coming in, trust that God's going to provide. And that's what we did. We moved forward and he has. And can I tell you something? As soon as we got engaged, my level of income doubled.
Really?
As soon as we got married, my level of income doubled.
Wow.
So, I mean, it was just God saying, you know, hey, I'm going to take care of you, mm-hmm. you know, and he did, and he does.
Yeah. Yeah. My, the roommate that just got married, they were kind of wondering, because I think when they got engaged, they had the mindset of, like you guys, mm-hmm. of we want to be intentional with this dating thing. We don't want to just date casually. And so they got married and they were kind of like, okay, we both have these part-time jobs, you know, mm-hmm. what are we going to do? And it's like, they both, I mean, I remember talking to them, we're just like, you know, we're just trusting the Lord that he's going to provide because yeah. we feel like we're doing the right thing by honoring each other and staying pure and, you know, walking intentionally in this thing. And yep. so not long after that, my roommate, the one that lived with me, got a job that was like double what she was making totally. Before. And so it's just awesome that God provides, you know.
Oh, he does. I mean, you know, the righteous, you know, they're in want of nothing, you mm-hmm. know, the people who walk with God, who are his people. And I've seen that happen in my life and in other people's lives who just trust him. And something to be said for that.
Yeah. Did it strengthen your relationship with Kelly a lot as you guys were kind yeah. of in that weird
place? You've got to become a person and a couple of prayer, you mm-hmm. know, at that point. And believe me, I mean, our income level, our, you know, ability to pay the bills has ebbed and flowed, you know, over these past 4 years. There have been great months. There have been really difficult months. Mm-hmm. But in every one of those seasons, every one of the down seasons, like I can go back and look at the journal entry where we got a random $3,000 check from a couple who was like, hey, we want to help you guys out. You know,
yeah.
it's like, oh, okay, God, you know, you're continuing to. So, and it's just made us more grateful as a couple, and it's made us more more prayerful as a couple, which has been great.
Right.
Yeah.
That's so encouraging. So what advice would you give like single guys that are maybe listening to this podcast that want to get married, or I mean, just sure. what's your advice?
You know, one of the things that that God had to get me and Kelly to, just mentally and spiritually, before we got into marriage was a deep contentment with our single status.
Hmm.
That's probably not terribly popular, but it's popular at least with the Apostle Paul, you know, like
right.
he says singleness is a gift. And of course, everybody who's listening is like, false. It's not, but it is because Paul's reasoning is because it secures undistracted devotion to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And there are opportunities that single guys and single girls have right now that they would not have when they were married. There's things that they can do in terms of ministry, in terms of being out, either ministering or even with friends, that you have more restrictions when you're married.
Mm-hmm.
And although I wouldn't trade marriage for anything, the reality is there is a liberty and a freedom that single guys and girls have that I don't anymore.
Yeah.
And I think there's that is a good thing because you have the ability to be used by God in a very unique way. So I would say, if you're a single guy out there, please don't miss treasuring the gift that God has for you in this season. If we constantly are longing for the next thing, we're never going to be content in the current thing.
Yeah.
You know, if 1 Timothy 6 says godliness coupled with contentment is great gain. And so I think we just need to become people of contentment. And, you know, as soon as I got respectively and Kelly got respectively to a place where we were like, you know, God, single forever or married next week, I'm happy with you.
Right.
You are my portion.
Mm-hmm.
God brought us into each other's lives, like right after that.
Right.
And you know, it's not that God is withholding good things,
mm-hmm.
but his primary goal in the life of a person, single, married, whatever, is is that we would become completely enamored with and content with the person of Jesus. And he's going to do whatever that takes. And it might be keeping some of those folks single for a while,
right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I would say strive to get there, and let God work out the marriage stuff.
Yeah. So what about, I had a friend about a year ago that she was in a serious dating relationship, and she told me, we were kind of talking about our walks with the Lord, and, you know, I was asking her, how's your walk with the Lord, and like, everything like that. And she said, honestly, it's really hard to love the Lord with all your heart and love the person you're dating with all your heart too.
Yeah.
And she's like, I have kind of sacrificed the Lord for this person that's now in my life. And she's like, I don't think it's possible to give the Lord all of my heart and then give this person all of my heart too.
Sure.
So what would your response be to that? Because at the time I wasn't dating anyone, and now I am. And so it's kind of like, I'm struggling to find that balance too.
Yeah.
What would you say?
About that? And she was dating, right? She was dating this guy. Mm-hmm.
They're married now, but they were dating at the time.
Yeah. So. That's cool. You know, I don't even know that I would say that me and Kelly loved each other with all of our heart when we were dating.
Hmm.
We loved each other, you know, for sure. But I think there was a level of guarding that went on with our hearts that we really didn't give over to each other until we were married. You know, we didn't even use the phrase "I love you" till we were engaged.
Really?
Because we didn't. We wanted to protect our hearts,
and
that was good. But you know, I think if you are loving the Lord with all your heart, you necessarily will love other people with all your heart too, because loving the Lord with all your heart kind of breeds this self-giving love in you. You know, and what does it mean to love another person with all your heart, except that you desire what's best for them, and you're not in it for selfish reasons, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think those two are diametrically opposed. I don't think that, like, I love my wife with everything I am, and I love my Lord with everything I am. And those two things aren't mutually exclusive. You know, they both complement and work off each other. You know, as I love the Lord, I love my wife more.
Mm-hmm.
As I love my wife more, I deepen in my gratitude for my God, and I love him more. And because of that, I go, you know, it's this kind of cycle. So
it's kind of an overflow. Like, the way that I've been trying to look at it is that it's an overflow of your walk with the Lord. It's how you love another person. It's not,
sure,
it's not that this is over here and this is over here, and the two don't really affect each other, but they actually.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, and that's not just dating love or marital love. It's love, you know? It's how we ought to love anybody, you know.
Right.
Although there is a unique element about the love that someone has for their spouse, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Amanda and I, the other intern, we've been reading When Sinners Say I Do by Dave Harvey.
Oh, I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, it's an incredible book. And it's really all about how the gospel applies to marriage and even going into marriage, just kind of preparation type stuff.
Yeah.
So with you and Kelly, like, what does the gospel look like in the context of your marriage? And
yeah.
Kind of,
well, I mean, we definitely are two sinners who got married.
Right.
You know, because of that, and that was one thing that in premarital counseling we talked about, you know, understand that, you know, we had, it was like different days sessions, you know, understand that you're marrying a saint. The next day was understand that you're marrying a sinner, you know, understand you're marrying a child of God who is redeemed and washed by the blood of Jesus.
Right.
But also understand that you're marrying a person who has the capability to hurt you deeply, who has the capability to make grave errors and mistakes and sins. And it's, you know, the gospel plays out in that I cannot hold a grudge against my wife. I have the ability to, and sometimes I do, but I ought not to, because if the gospel has infiltrated your life, and you understand how deeply you've been forgiven, you can't but forgive other people.
Right.
You know, and there's no relationship that's more necessary or dire than your marriage, you know, to understand that I have to extend grace right now, even though they're hurting me deeply, because I have been extended grace, you know?
Yeah.
And it's that particular element of our marriage and that element of the gospel that makes it so hard for me to understand how it's possible to have a deeply successful marriage, mm-hmm. you know, outside of a Christian context, you know, because, right. When you've been forgiven much, you love much, you know, mm-hmm. And you can forgive. And that's really the only way that me or Kelly can come to the table without resentment, without bitterness toward each other, is because we go, we have a God who's forgiven us a lot. You know, even this morning we had some conflict on the phone and that's just my thought. I can't be bitter here. Right. I have no right. Because my God has forgiven me, you know? Mm-hmm. And so just extending grace to one another is awesome.
Yeah. Have you seen that a lot in other couples that you know, just practicing the gospel in the context of marriage? Or, because it's not something I've seen a lot, so it's kind of new for me. It's
sure.
Like, oh, this would make sense, obviously, but I haven't seen it a lot.
Yeah, well, you know, we definitely have a lot of couples in our lives who have great marriages. And, you know, I think a lot of the times... you might see I probably see more of the fruit of that interplay of, you know, maybe hurt, but then there's forgiveness and mm-hmm. you know, grace extended. Because usually that stuff takes place, you know, at 1 a.m. when you're both tired and arguing and fighting,
right.
you know, and you see that kind of dynamic take place. But I would say a lot of the marriages that I've seen in my life as a Christian now, folks in my church and things like that are great exhibitions of that. But I've also, we have very close friends that have now been divorced, mm-hmm. Who were deeply committed Christians who, just that wasn't playing out in their marriage, and bitterness took root and right. there wasn't forgiveness. And, you know, and so now they're done with each other and they've moved on, and it's, you know, and so marriage is a very dangerous thing, you know. Go into it with caution and grace.
Right.
Yeah.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, in light of the gospel, I kind of want to shift a little bit to that, because I've noticed that through a lot of the lyrics in your songs, that's kind of a common thread, which I think is awesome. It's
yeah.
it's kind of rare, as sad as that is, in Christian music, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot of songs about, you know, this is what I'm going through, or that kind of thing, which has its place, you
sure.
know, definitely. But but what kind of inspired that out of you? I mean, is it like, what's your personal experience with the gospel and that kind of a thing?
Yeah. I probably talk and sing about it so much because I wrestle with it so much. The gospel is a very shocking message particularly to someone like me, because I really like to earn my keep, and I like to work hard for what I get. And then I like to get stuff based on how hard I worked, you know?
Yeah.
And the gospel comes to me and says, that's a really dumb idea, Jimmy. You know,
it doesn't work.
It doesn't. God is thoroughly unimpressed with the things that I bring to the table.
Wow. Yeah.
And you know, I have a past and a history of sin that has, you know, kind of also compounded my struggle to please, because I feel so undeserving of mm-hmm. grace that it's hard for me to receive it. So I try to make that up. So, you know, a lot of the songs, like a song, Forgiven and Loved, that was played on a lot of stations nationwide. It is a song grappling with the gospel. You know, I try so hard in a given day to do all the right things, to not do all the wrong things, in order to appease this God who I think is perpetually embittered and frustrated with me you know, and disappointed. And yet I fail to realize the whole time that I'm not a son of God because of anything I did in the first place.
Right.
You know, and if you're listening, you're not a son or a daughter of God if you're a Christian, because of what you brought to the table, or the impressive deed of even faith that you accomplished for God that he's marveling at, and he decides to save you. God saves us, by his grace, mm-hmm. by his choosing and his mercy. And if that's the case for our salvation, that's the case for our life after mm-hmm. We're saved too. And so that song in particular, the kind of hook of the chorus is, I've tried and tried to rectify my desperate situation, but I bought the lie. I still have work to do. Now I'm working 9 to 5, like I can earn my own salvation, but there is no condemnation in you. And that's Romans 8:1, that there's therefore now no condemnation for those who are in Christ. And that is the gospel, mm-hmm. that though we not only get stuff, don't do the right things, but we always do the wrong things. There's a God who could judge us, but has chosen to come in the form of a man to die and pay for our fine, and he can embrace us now based on what his son did, and that's relieving. That should be a breath of fresh air for us as Christians. And I just haven't got over it yet, so I keep singing about it.
Yeah. No, it's great. It's great because something that I've noticed, even I don't know, just being a Christian for a while, is that people tend to think the gospel is like the beginning, it's the foundational stuff. Right. And so they don't apply it to their lives on a daily basis. It's just kind of like, okay, I said the prayer, now I'm in.
Right.
Now I'm immersed in Christian culture and I'm supposed to be this Christian, but they don't understand the like connection between the gospel and their daily lives, you know?
Totally.
And waking up every day, you know, breathing the gospel and understanding God's grace.
So. Absolutely. I mean, Martin Luther, after his spiritual transformation, he was a pastor of a church in Wittenberg, and he preached the gospel every week for a whole year. And his congregants were so tired of it that they came up to him and they were like, hey, can you maybe give us another message, please? And he's like, I will stop preaching this message when you understand this message. Mm-hmm. It's so vital to the Christian life that we know this and embrace it as Christians. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just for the lost. It's for me. It's for you. It's for everybody.
Right. Yeah. I just want to commend you on that because, I grew up in a church that was kind of more the prosperity gospel message. Mm-hmm. So I didn't actually, I heard Jesus died on the cross for your sins. You know, mm-hmm. like that's kind of the common phrase. But I never actually heard the gospel or why I needed the gospel mm-hmm. until I was like 18, you know, yeah. and I was out of my church. And so I met up with my roommate now. She kind of had a similar experience and went to one of your concerts. She went to the one that you played at MTSU. Mm-hmm. And when we left that concert, she was like, I've never understood the gospel before until now. And she's been a Christian for all of her life, but never had an understanding of God's grace and his mercy.
Wow.
And so...
That's beautiful. Thanks for telling me that. That's encouraging.
Yeah. I mean, I think it the gospel impacts Christians or people who maybe even think they're Christians.
So. Sure.
I mean, I don't know anyone's heart but my own.
So, yeah, totally.
But
I barely know my own. So
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just want to thank you for that. And
awesome.
Thank you for everything and for interviewing and coming here and talking to us and stuff.
Well, it's my privilege. Thank you for spending some time chatting.
Awesome.
In the passion of your sacrifice, saw the prophecy fulfilled. The healer of the world, the wounded Christ, I heard you say, come follow me. So I will, yes I will, follow you Jesus, all the way up that hill. Follow you Jesus, all the way up that hill, to the cross where the river runs crimson even still. Yes, I will follow you, Lord.
Well, hey, everyone. I'm opening up this week's inbox and have another guest in the studio here, Dr. Chris Leland, known as Doc Leland. He is in charge of our Focus Leadership Institute here at Focus on the Family. Welcome, Dr. Leland.
It's good to be with you.
Hey. All right. Well, this one, we had to bring you in for this because it relates to college as well as kind of faith worldview kind of stuff. So Dr. Leland is our kind of go-to guy for some of that here at Focus on the Family. So I thought he would do a great job of offering some perspective on this. This question is from Stephanie, and I'll go ahead and read it and let you take a stab at it. Stephanie says, for a couple of years now, I've struggled with the balance between having Christian and non-Christian friends. I currently attend a Christian university outside of my hometown. The problem is, even within a Christian university, I seem to cling to the non-Christians in the school. Back home, most of my close friends are also non-Christians, so there's no Christian support there. I know that I need to be very careful because I do believe your friends influence who you are, but at the same time, I believe although they are non-believers, my friends are overall good people. More than that, I find my non-believer friends are real with me. I've seen my non-believer friends openly admit to having premarital sex, and then have my Christian friends claim to be believers, yet act exactly the same as the non-believers. It seems the Christians are either A, strong Christians who don't take the time to get to know non-believers, or worse, take every chance to convert them, usually scaring them away, or B, say they're Christians but don't actively practice the gospel. Thankfully, my family's helped me stay strong in my faith, but I really want and need Christian friends. Please give me some advice.
It's a great question. Yeah. I mean, it's a great scenario, and it's very real because we see this so often, not just amongst younger people, the college age folks, but throughout the church. It's a real challenge because there's several things that she says. I mean, first of all, praise the Lord, she has a family who she's still very rooted in, and that's probably one of the places to start. Is if that support system is coming from the family, that's an amazing gift, and Stephanie should be very thankful for that, and I am. For her, I think she's more confident than she. I hear the angst in what she's saying, but I think she should be more confident. Mm-hmm. She's in a very good place. God has her kind of stuck right between those people that are needing to hear and see the gospel lived out in front of them, and a support system of Christian friends. I think what she's wanting to know is, you know, how important is that? I just seem to be drawn to it. First of all, I mean, she's all of her close friends, she says, or most of them are at home or non-Christians, and so there's a comfort level. She's used to dealing with them more, maybe even than some of the Christian friends. So I encourage her to continue to stay supported by Christian community. And part of the goal of Christian community is to be able to build each other up. Whether we're talking about the Christian community at a college or in a church or a small group or the groups we have, the Quest teams or the life groups we have here at the Institute. That's part of the main goal. How do we support one another? She's running into, though, one of the biggest digs at today's church, and that is the sort of hypocrisy of people don't seem real, and shame on us for not doing that. That's part of the authenticity that we're called to. In fact, I think it's Romans 12:9 that says love must be sincere, and Paul's giving a bullet list in 9 through 13 of exactly what we're supposed to look like in that community. And sincere, the word there means open, vulnerable, be able to see through. And if we're not doing that in Christian community, then I can see why it's very attractive in her non-Christian friends. And I hope she would begin to find people who would be real, that she could hold accountable and that could hold her accountable as well. So I encourage the balance. The other thing that I think, and I want her to be really encouraged, and everybody who's listening to be really encouraged by God putting you right smack in the middle of that circumstance. I was running across some of the teaching stuff I'm going to do this semester, and there are two words for time in the New Testament in Greek. One of them is chronos, which is like your watch, or the time, the actual time. The other was kairos, and kairos is defined kind of loosely as God's plan and your life intersecting. And so there's a moment. In fact, I looked up this morning, the Greek god Kairos is actually a statue that's turned around facing away. And in fact, walking away, walking past opportunities that came to him. Now, they're talking about riches and glory. But if Jesus several times talks about those Kairos moments, those moments where God's going to put somebody right in front of you. And you're called at that point to be able to engage, whatever that looks like. And I want to encourage her and others to, you know, live that out in front of non-Christian friends. Allow them to see your authenticity, your realness. Allow them to see what the gospel looks like. And I guarantee you're going to be given an opportunity to give an answer for the hope that's in you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And I think it's interesting, like you said, Chris, there's just a huge question mark with this in the church, especially when we're talking about young adults, because the quest for authenticity is so real. And I just want to encourage Stephanie. One thing, you know, my dad said, because he was a missionary and a pastor and was hurt by the church many times. And I remember he told us kids, he said, you know, never judge Christ by Christians, because mm-hmm. Christians are always going to disappoint you, yeah. But Jesus never fails. And so to make sure that she's distinguishing, you know, failed, imperfect, sinful Christians from Jesus Christ, who and Christianity Christianity, the Christian faith, and really how that will never fail her. You know, because eventually, you know, you have to enter into fellowship with other believers. I mean, hopefully she's plugged into a local church. Hopefully right. she has a small group there. And I mean, it's very easy. And I'm, you know, I can tend to be a very snap judgment person too, and just say that person is so fake or that person's crazy, you know, or whatever. And I just write people off, you know, right. and it's on to the next person. And so I just want to encourage her to really give folks a chance and to wrestle with them in their sin and in their imperfection, and recognize that they will fail and disappoint, just as she will yep. with others as well. But also to take advantage, just as you said, of that very real opportunity that she has with those non-Christian friends, and to maybe pull some other believers into that circle as well, because, oh, yeah. you know, that kind of influence is huge, and that kind of living life on life kind of scenario is a big deal, and non-Christians will stand up and take notice. So I just think it's great that she wrote in, you know, very
exactly.
self-aware of this, and the opportunity she has is huge.
Well, I can hear a mom or a dad, mm-hmm. as a mom or a dad of a dad now of a 17-year-old getting ready to go off to college. It's so, you know, surround yourself, the advice is surround yourself with good Christian young people, and that'll protect you. And I that's great advice. Mm-hmm. It really is. Mm-hmm. But I really feel like God's called us to be both in, you know, in the world, but not of it. Mm-hmm. And so finding that sort of balance of what does that look like? And asking people like Stephanie to say, why do you think God's put you right there?
Yeah.
At that college, at this time, hanging out with those folks. He's given you a message to live out and probably talk about.
Yeah. And it may mean being very persistent. It may mean going to a Bible teaching church and going to a small group and saying, here's what I'm looking for. Who else is in this as well?
Right.
Who else is in for a real, you know, authentic Christian relationship, you know, and a life on life, an accountability partner, something like that. Sometimes you have to raise your hand and ask. I've had to do that with mentors, because it's not like mentors are out there saying, where are the young women who want to be mentored? They're all saying, oh, I can't mentor. I can't do anything. Well, ladies, you need to just step up and get it done. You need to figure out
at whatever
go
age.
After people. Yeah.
I mean, we have a number of the students who come through the Institute who are very capable. And in fact, I think called, you listen to them talk, they're mm-hmm. called to mentor younger women, mm-hmm. and they need to. And yeah. it's not like you have to have some sort of great curriculum in mind, or just living life together.
Right.
And that's the kind of reality, the authenticity, I think, that she's seeking in all of those relationships. And I'd say keep seeking it.
Yeah.
That's where we're falling down. There's a book, Unchurched, by Stephen Mansfield that came out recently, and he tells the story at the beginning of being an RA at a Christian college, and he got called in the days of beepers. He got called to go on an emergency to one of the other dorms, goes down to the basement where all the soda machines and candy machines are, and there's a dad who's distraught and a mom who's distraught and the student who's worried, and the student's little brother had his arm stuck up the candy machine. He had reached up inside it. And I mean, they were trying to get it out, and there was blood coming down the kid's arm. Uh-huh. It was, you know, everybody was a little freaked out. But it took Mansfield just a couple of seconds to realize the reason his arm won't come out is because he's grabbing hold of a Snicker bar. Mm-hmm. And he was like, kid, let go of the candy bar. Mm-hmm. And he uses the analogy to say, so often we see the negativity of the church and of Christians, and we just want to hang on to it. Mm-hmm. And for some of us, it's the lesson of, hey, let go, mm-hmm. move on. Mm-hmm. You're going to get stuck with that. And if you want to just revel in that, great. But I mean, that's not healthy. That's not what we're supposed to be.
Right. Yeah, and kind of the famous saying of, you know, if you're looking for a perfect church, the minute you show up and find it, it will cease to be perfect with your presence.
Yeah, well, if you have a background pastor and missionaries, my dad was a pastor, and you begin to see sort of the seedy underbelly of the human-run church, mm-hmm. Because it's not perfect.
Yeah.
But it is to be Jesus's perfect bride mm-hmm. someday. Hmm.
It's true. All right. Well, Stephanie, do that. Go out and find community. Let us know how it's going. Write to us and give us updates from time to time. Let us know how it goes. Everyone write to us, editor@boundless.org. Chris, thank you so much for joining this question. Again, Chris is in charge of our Focus Leadership Institute. You can find out more about that at focusleadership.org. I know many of you out there in our listenership have gone through the Institute, and basically it changed your life. So tell others about it, those who you know are in school or on the front end of grad school. Make sure they find out more info about that. An amazing, amazing, life-changing experience. So that is it for this week's show. Join us next week as we tackle more topics for young adults. Have more interviews coming down the pike, as well as more of your questions. So until then, I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org, focused on the family.